All right. We are eventually, I think, going to get into 2 Thessalonians, but it may be a week or two before we get jumped into that. So until then, we're still doing some filler nights. So we're going to be in Psalm number 3. Psalm 3. Turn there with me, if you will. Psalm number 3. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many they be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, for my glory and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill, Selah. I laid me down and slept and awaked, for the Lord sustained me, and I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God. For thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people, Selah. And these are basically songs. You know, a lot of the Psalms are written as songs, and they would be sung and shared in these stories and these praises. And if you're ever down, if you're ever discouraged and you need something to lift you up, there are some psalms that can be down a little bit just because of the content, but the majority of them are encouraging and uplift the spirit. So if you want something that's going to lift you up and you're a little bit down, jump in there and read some of those psalms, and they can be encouraging. This one is a unique psalm because of the content of what's in it, because of the story behind the writing of this psalm. This is a difficult time in David's life. David was known as a man after God's own heart. We know that, right? We know that God said, he's a man after my own heart. God saw something in David that he didn't see in a lot of other people, and that's the reason that God said he's going to be the next king over Israel. That's the reason God told Samuel to go and anoint him with oil and pronounce him to be the next king over Israel. So at that moment when he anointed him to be king is when the kingdom was taken away from Saul and it was given to David, though David was a while before he ever sat on the throne. Saul had to die. David didn't kill him. David said, he's God's man, and I'm not going to do that. That's between him and the Lord. So it ended up being once he was killed in battle that David assumed the position of king. So David started to rule, and he was a good man. David was a godly man. And I want to say, for the most part of David's life, he was a really great king, and he was a really great man. Isn't it sad sometimes that one event in your life, even though it could be pretty dramatic, is what David did, but we can be identified by one negative event in our life? People remember those things, don't they? You do one thing wrong, and it's perhaps even made public or whatever, and that's how we're identified or labeled. A lot of nicknames have come from one event in people's lives, whether it's a good event or a bad event. But we see how we think and how we respond to those kind of things. And I can't help it because I'm human. And as I read the stories of David, I see what David did. I see the mistake that he made. I see the one, what we call the great sin that David committed, and we label him by that. But outside of that event, which was dramatic, no doubt, but David was a good man. He was a good-hearted man. He was a man after God's own heart, and he loved people. He loved his family. And this is an event that happened in the life of David that I'm going to say, outside of when he committed adultery and murdered Uriah, that this event broke David's heart probably more than any other. And what happened was he had children by different wives. So some were half brother and sister, and some were full blood brother and sister. So Absalom, who he's kind of written this about, was one of his sons. He had a sister, Tamar. And so Tamar was young. She was beautiful. She was a virgin. And so he had another son which would be half brother to them, named Absalom. And so Absalom was not a very good man. And Absalom had fallen sick. I can't remember the full details of the story. I should have went back and read it, but I want to just recap just a moment to get you in the mindset of what's going on here in David's heart when this psalm was written. But David had these children, and Absalom lusted after his half-sister Tamar, which is in itself not good. It shows you where his mindset is. So some of his friends said, well, you act like you're sick, and you tell her that you want her to come in to nurse you and to help you, and basically said, then you can take advantage of her. That's what he did, brought her in. And he raped his half-sister and then cast her away like a bag of trash. So you can imagine what happened to the heart of Absalom, her brother. I want him dead. I mean, so the anger that Absalom had for what had been done, and within this family, within David's children, this fire was raging and had been kindled, and it's just like there's no answer to it. There's no resolution to it. And I know that David made a lot of mistakes in how he handled that situation. We don't know the details. The Bible doesn't explain to us exactly how David tried to handle it, or if he did try to handle it, we don't know. But we do know there was such anger and hatred there, and there was such bitterness there and strife within the family that Absalom wanted Absalom wanted Amnon dead, and he ended up dying and was killed. And then Absalom came and wanted to take over the throne of his father David because he felt as though David didn't step up and do what he needed to do. It's almost like we're watching a soap opera here. It's crazy when you look at the life of David and his kids. I mean, it's just one thing after the other. Well, this psalm is identified to be written during that time when David was on the run from Absalom. Because what David did was, David left the kingdom. You know why David left the kingdom was because he didn't want to face Absalom when he showed up, because he thought if he shows up, what's going to happen is one of two things going to happen. I'm going to have to kill him, or he's going to kill me. Father and son. He said, I didn't want to do that. I don't want to kill him. And I would kind of like to keep my life too. So David fled. David ran. And that's where you see David wrote Psalm number 3. First couple of verses, let's go back. Now that we kind of know the background, let's go back and revisit these couple of verses at a time. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah. That makes more sense now, doesn't it? He's talking about his own family, his own son, and all those that have joined alliance with him. They're all against me. It's almost, David almost felt like nobody cares for him. Nobody loves him. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt so low that you feel like, I just don't know if I have a friend left? I don't know if anybody really cares for me or is concerned about me. David was a broken man. Acts chapter 5 and verse 51 says, and they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing in that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. Romans 8, 17. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together. That's talking about when we suffer for Christ, when we go through hardships in life and we feel as though we didn't really deserve those things that we're facing. I'm not going to say David didn't deserve some of the things that he suffered, because we don't, again, know all the details of the conversations that were made behind closed doors. We just know the anger. We know that Absalom didn't believe that his father stepped up and did the right thing. So there are a lot of problems within this family. But when I saw that story, I read through that story, I think about the events that took place, I think of him being a daddy that's broken over his kids and his family. That's broken. And he's hurting and he's suffering and he's in pain. And I think about the suffering that we go through at times. There are times that we're going to suffer and we didn't do anything to deserve the suffering that we're in. We didn't cause the suffering that we're in. We didn't do anything necessarily wrong, but basically we're trying to do things right. We're trying to glorify God, but we find ourselves suffering for the cause of Christ. Have you ever suffered for the cause of Christ? Have you ever lost something or someone for the cause of Christ? Have you ever stood on what to be the truth of God, and it seems as though you've been cheated out of something because of that? It's not easy, is it? I've lost friends for the cause of Christ. We lose things like that. We have things that happen, and does it feel good? No, it don't feel good. It stinks, doesn't it? You know, when we suffer for the cause of Christ. I don't know anybody that wants to suffer. And we sure don't want to suffer for the cause of Christ because we feel like we're the ones doing it right. But when we think about our suffering, it brings a little bit of comfort to me when I go back and revisit some of those people in the Bible that suffered greater than I'm ever going to suffer. I may have lost a friendship, which I thought was a friendship. I may have lost some of those things. Paul lived most of his life in ministry in prison. I have yet to go to prison for the cause of Christ. I'm not saying it won't happen. So beware. I've never been in the lion's den. Come on, was that good or what? For the cause of Christ. I've never been in the lion's den with Daniel. In the jungle. A weem away. But have you ever suffered? Have you ever had things that you know you're right, you know you're doing the godly thing, and then it just doesn't work out for you. And it seems as though, man, the more I try to obey God, it seems like the worse things get. But I think about these people, and my suffering is not so bad anymore when I think about a man that literally gave up everything to tell people about Jesus. That caused him to be in prison more than he was out of prison during his ministry. I guess we could say, you know, that's really not fair, is it? It's not really fair. But, you know, if he hadn't been in prison, I don't know that we'd have had all the letters that we have from him that he wrote to all these churches, because the bulk of these letters were written while Paul was imprisoned. Well, maybe he would have stopped in some of those cities and wrote some of those letters. I don't think so, because he didn't have time. I think Paul was one of those guys that he was like a bumblebee. He was going around, and the only time he stopped was when he stopped from exhaustion and he fell over and he slept for a few hours and he got back up and he went again. He was moving, he was going, he was sharing, he was evangelizing, witnessing, and I think he didn't have time to sit and write one of these letters. And I even believe that, and this is my two cents, that his thorn in the flesh was his eyesight was fading. Because he even said, in one of the letters especially, he said, and I wrote this by my own hand. Why would he acknowledge such a thing if it didn't have significance? I'm going to believe that perhaps most of the letters he dictated to someone else that wrote for him, Luke or someone else. Remember, by the way, Luke that traveled with him was a physician. So there you go. But I think about Paul and think about these other folks that suffered terribly for the cause of Christ. And Stephen literally died for witnessing to people. I mean, massive, not just little pebbles, but massive rocks they could hold with two hands and thrust them at Stephen. it's not going to take many hits for somebody to die. I don't know if maybe they did it as a form of torture, that they just crippled the legs and got someone down on the ground and just pelted them with all these. I don't know how that worked, but I'm sure there was an amount of cruelty in that form of death when they stoned somebody. Laughing, mocking. But I think about the suffering that people have gone through. Think about the hurt that caused David to write such a letter. Regardless of whether David was right or wrong, David was broken. So we're just identifying pain here. We're identifying suffering and pain that we feel in life. So when you suffer, when you're in pain, whether it's something you did to bring it on yourself, whether you're doing it for the cause of Christ, whatever it is that causes you to be in pain, understand you're not alone. You're not the Lone Ranger. Everybody feels pain. I'm going to say in the world today, a greater percentage of people feel their suffering right now. I'm going to say that to be true. I believe it. Let's look in verse number 3 and 4 and see what we follow that with. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter up of mine head. Make note of what happens next here, okay? I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I cried, and he heard me. Anytime you cry out to the Lord, he hears you. Every time you cry unto the Lord, he hears you. Anytime you're in pain, anytime you're suffering, anytime you're going through whatever it is you're going through, if you're just sad because somebody you love is dying or somebody's sick or somebody's hurt or somebody's away or gone, whatever it is that you're broken over, cry unto the Lord and he will hear you. I can't say I always hear everything that's directed toward me. Do you have selective hearing? Do you hear what you want to, as long as it's something good instead of something bad? I hear come to supper. I sometimes don't hear take the trash out. But when we cry out to God, he always hears us. Matthew 11, beginning in verse 28, says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He's basically saying, get on board with me because I'm not going to burden you with a heavy load to carry. I'm not going to treat you like a pair of oxen that we're going to pull a cart behind them and load it up to where you barely can move to get it down the trail. No, he said, my burden's light. I'm not going to put a lot of heaviness and burden on you. My job, Jesus is basically saying, is to take that burden from you. I'm going to carry the load and I'm going to be the heavy part. So don't be afraid to be a part of what Christ is doing. 1 Peter 5:7 says, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. He's saying, anytime we hurt, anytime we're in pain, just as David did, and thankfully we learned this lesson from Psalm number 3, that when David was in pain, he cried unto the Lord and God heard him. Cried out, God heard him. I know that's basic, it's fundamental, it's elementary, but we need to remember that. Because you know what? We don't always cry out to God when we're hurting. Do we? I don't. You would think a man that's been saved for 50 years would cry out to God when he hurts. I don't always do it. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with us? I guess we get to a point to where we think we're so educated and smart that we can handle it ourselves. If I got a problem, I'm going to fix it because that's what I do. I'm the fixer, you know. We don't want to take it and give it to God. But what he's telling us to do is in everything, in every problem we have, in every fear that we have, any time that we're anxious, any time that we're discouraged, take it to God and cry out to him. Because you know what he's doing? He is that loving father standing, waiting on the prodigal son to come back home. He's standing here looking at the road, waiting to see him come down the road. That's what he's waiting on. He's waiting on you and I to come home. As long as we continue to fight these things by ourselves, we're always going to lose. We're going to end up more discouraged, more defeated, more depressed. It's going to be more exhausting. take more of a toll on our lives. But until we cry out to God, we're going to be miserable. But if we cry out to Him, He's going to hear us. And it should be enough for us to know that He hears us, shouldn't it? He's not only going to hear us, He's going to respond. We know that. But He's going to respond in His time. We don't like that. But if we could get it in our heads that when we cry out to God, He hears us, we've made that connection with heaven, and we know God knows all about our trial. God knows all about our problem. And we've acknowledged to Him, we give it to Him. Something to be said about how we pray. Something to be said about it. Well, God knows the problem I've gone through. Yeah, He does, but He wants you to talk to Him about it. Well, God already knows I'm in this predicament. Why do I have to verbalize a prayer to Him? You just do. Because He wants you and I to acknowledge to Him, it's bigger than me. Don't assume that just because God knows everything in our lives, that He is just going to handle whatever situation we're in without us praying about it. He expects us to pray and to talk to Him about it. Not for His benefit, because He already knows it, but for our benefit, for us to acknowledge before Him, God, this is bigger than me. I can't handle this. Please take this. So that when we see Him work, we can raise both hands and glorify God that prayers have been answered. God has moved, and He's done beautiful and magnificent, terrible things God has done. So there's something to be said about crying out to God, and He's going to hear that. So take whatever it is. Take everything to God. Don't be afraid to lift even the littlest of things that we think, do I need to take this to God? Absolutely take it all to Him. Take everything to Him. The smallest things could be the ones that develop into the biggest problems. Well, this little decision here I can make myself. No, not really. No, we need to seek God. We need to get His input in this. Could I even find in church life, it seems like the things that we think are going to be the least amount of trouble end up being the most trouble sometimes. Why is that? Why is it the things that we think are set and locked in, and we worry about these bigger things over here, and we don't put enough energy and prayer into these smaller things and other things? Those are the things that rear up and cause the most harm. Why is that? I think it's to teach us a lesson. That's why. I think it's God telling us, don't forsake those things and assume too much. Don't take for granted that everything's going to just work smooth. Pray earnestly about everything. Go in an attitude of prayer. Then verse 5 and 6 in Psalm 3, he said, I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Philippians 3:13 says, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. 2 Corinthians 5:17, therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is new creature. Old things are passed away, and behold, all things have become new. I love the first part of verse number 5. I laid me down and I slept. When we really take something to God, when we cry out to Him and He hears us, and we literally give Him our situation, then that's what needs to happen next. We need to lay down and sleep. Rest. I'm not saying that literally just take a nap, unless you want to. A nap is good. About 2:30 in the afternoon. Am I right? Come on. Hey, if you're over 55, naps are a great thing, okay? So about 2:30, be careful when you come into church over here. I may be napping back here. He said, I laid me down and I slept. All right, now let's rewind to the history behind the third Psalm. What did David write it from? The events of his family. How do you lay down and sleep when your family is a wreck? Because you cry out to God and God hears you. And God gives you something. that you didn't have before. Does he ever do that for you? I mean, when we pray, we get a hold of heaven, and we lay down that heaviness and that burden, we give it to God, there's something he gives us. You can call it whatever you want to, peace, joy, whatever you want to, comfort. It's got many names, but in all those names, that's what he gives you. He gives you this. And when we get it, we're not the same person we were. Now, here's what we need to understand. Our circumstances have not changed. Still craziness in the family of David, right? Circumstances have not changed, but the heart of David has changed because of his relationship with God has changed. God may not just come down and just poof, fix everything in everybody's life before David to make his life joyful and happy and content and peaceful. But what God will do is he will calm the heart of his servant first, then give you the plan and the direction and the wisdom to be able to handle those situations. When Jesus saw the waves and saw the wind, saw the storm and saw the chaos of the weather and the hearts of his disciples that were with him, he said, "Don't be afraid, it's me." Then Jesus turned and calmed the storm. What did Jesus do there? Why didn't he just come down and just calm the storm, then talk to the guys? Because sometimes the storm's still raging, but he's more concerned about your soul than he is the storm. If he can get our heart where it needs to be and bring that peace where it needs to be, then we together can approach the storm. Yeah, there's sometimes God's calmed the storm first. I get it. There's sometimes God's just fixed it. You know, sometimes, like with the Red Sea, when you walk out and you put the staff out there in the water, smack it, that he parts the Red Sea, and we walk over on dry land where we don't have to put any faith into that. We just do what God opened up for us, walk through. Then there are other times at the Jordan where you got to put your foot in first before he opens it up. There are those moments the storm's not going to be taken away first, but God's going to give us direction, and if we follow that direction, he'll give us the peace we need. And when we put our foot in the water by faith, then we see those beautiful things happen. But we can lay down and we can rest in the midst of a chaotic world if we're where we need to be with Jesus. Verse 7 and 8, "Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God. For thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone, thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord, thy blessing is upon thy people." Then you know what we do? We just sit back and watch God work. God will sort it out. We get in here and we try to analyze the situation. We try to put all these different scenarios together. We try to solve the situation. Well, there's like three different ways this thing can go. No, because there's a fourth. That's what God's going to do, and you just don't see it. What God's wanting us to do is just trust him. In the midst of the chaos of life, God wants us to do one simple thing: trust him. Don't try to fix it, but believe in the one that can and will fix it. Then we can lay down and we can sleep. Problem is, many times we'll try to lay down. We'll get anxious. We'll wake up again. We'll lay down, we'll get back up. We're down, we're up. We're down, we're up. We got to let it go. We got to give it to God. We got to understand we're not powerful enough. We're not strong enough. We don't have the ability to fix it, but God does. In our chaos of life, trust God. Cry out to him and he will hear you and he will give you, he promises he will give you what you right now don't have. Peace.